I'm Ernest Soucy. I'm the son of Alfred Soucy and Jane Bossy. And I was born in Grand Isle, and I've been here in Van Buren since 1918 when we came down here. And I'm married to Winnie Violet, the daughter of Joe F. Violet and Catherine Shear Violet. And we have three children, Ernestine and Gregory and Melvin. We have two, Melvin is still single, the two others are married. Ernestine is married to Guy Duby, and we have one grandchild, Danny. And Gregory is married in Smiths Falls, Ontario, to Ruth Davis, and he's a psychologist and works there. Melvin is with me in business. We just bought my partner's share January 1st, 1972.
The name of your partner? The name of your partner?
Is Melvin Soucy.
Of your partner?
Yeah. Well, this I'll probably cover a little. I should probably have started with that, you know. But probably I should talk a little on our business, the way it was started. In 1941, in April 1941, which is exactly 31 years to the day, I think it's on April the 21st that we started in business, in 1941. And we started here at this location, a building that I had bought from Gloris Duperrey's.
Where is this building?
Here.
Right. Yeah, right, this.
Same.
Oh, yes. This building that we had bought from Gloris Duperrey, from the estate of Gloris Duperrey, on Main Street, on the Keegan Road, on the corner of Champ Lane and Pier Street. And we started the business here, and it was a little discouraging at first, because our assets were not too big. We started on a shoestring, so to speak. And after a few years, we enlarged the store, we remodeled the store, we added online to it, and we...
What kind of a store was it?
It's a department store. We carry a full line of General Electric appliances and Maytag. And we carry a men's clothing line, which we have a complete men's store, along with a grocery store, an IGA store. When it was first started, it was on a small scale, but in 1945 we enlarged the store 4 years after. And we kept on remodeling and adding to it to what it is today.
What is it today?
Well, today it's a store that is doing a fairly good volume. When we first started, we were discouraged by quite a few people. We were discouraged people that had mentioned that the location wasn't any good, because years back quite a few had tried and opened a store here. I know six or seven firms had opened up a store, including a chain store. In 1929, the Cloverdale store, I don't know if you remember the name Cloverdale, which was a chain outfit like A&P or First National. In fact, Cloverdale stores were bought by First National stores. And they operated here in this store, in this building. And Leo M. Poirier was the manager of that store. And The store stayed open for 2 years, and after 2 years, they closed the store. They couldn't make a go of it. Probably they were too far from the market, and then they merged with First National, too, and they closed the store. A number of people tried, and that's what some people told me when I first mentioned to them that I was opening up a store at this location. They said, gee, you'll never make it. Everybody tried, and you just won't be able to make it.
What was your work previous to?
Previous to that, I had worked for my uncle, Vital Violet. I worked for him for 8 years, from 1933 to 1941. And my partner, Roy, had worked for him for about...
Roy
Jewett had worked for him too. We were both working there when we left, and to start this business. So, like I said, we were discouraged by quite a few, because we were opening up and to make business with well-established firm in the section. At the time, there was very good and strong businessmen in the section around here and even in town.
How built up was the area around your store?
There wasn't much more than we have today. Of course, there was a vacant lot, you know, on the south side of Beer Street, which I bought, and we built that warehouse where it is. And then next to us, there was a building there, a small house, that was built by the old Hammond outfit way back in the 1800s, which was bought at we changed hands quite a few times, but I bought it back from Ralph Sears about 6-7 years ago, which we made a parking lot for, which is why we bought the building. And the same thing on the Imperial Street in back, where he put it good now, at a house. We bought that place too because we needed it. Our lot was getting too small. When we first had the store was the lot seems to be pretty big. The building was small, so we had quite a bit of space around it. But as we enlarged the store, we came that we didn't have any place at all, so that's why we had to buy the neighbors around.
Could you specify the size of your store when you first started?
When we opened up, the size of the store was 21 by 40, which was a very small store, and an old building. A very, very old building. And I had bought the store 3 years before. You know, I bought the store in 1938. And when I bought the store, I bought it from Cloris Liberi, like I mentioned a little while ago. And they were about to lose the building for taxes. And I talked with Miss Duberry, and I bought the store from her, but the building was so far gone that you just couldn't live in it. For them, they had to move out because the building was falling apart. And I repaired it right in that first year.
Was there an apartment in that building?
The Duperes lived on the second floor, which we occupied 6 or 7 months after because I had to repair it to be able to move there. And that was the size of the building then. And today we have a store. It's about 50 by 100 feet. It's still too small because we have so many departments. But
name all the different departments you have now.
Well, now it's divided. We have more or less a group IGA grocery department, plus a very modern men's store. We carry the best of lines, such as Van Heusen and Freeman Shoes, and all the complete line of Van Heusen shirts and sportswear, plus the campus line of sportswear and the Curry Suits, which is a well-known line in the state of Maine and in the East. When we come to furniture, we carry a good line of furniture. We have the Bassett line of furniture. plus the international line of furniture, and the General Electric appliances, which we've been carrying since 1938, even before I opened up our Southern appliances. See, 3 years before. I bought the building in 1938 and we started in business just in 1941. So 3 years I had a sideline that I was working nights or... So that's how come we got started. But apparently it proved pretty good. We're still surviving, we're making a good volume, and of course the sad part of it, we're getting a little old. My partner retired this year at 59. His health is not that good, you know, he's worked hard through the years, and time will come that I'll have to leave too. And I'm lucky to have a son that's interested and may be able to take over. It's too much for one man. A business this size, you need at least two or three good men, managers of department. And it makes it hard because it's a small town. But we'll manage. All right, we have a good home. And so.
How many people do you employ?
We employ 10 people.
How many secretaries?
Just one. There's one. We have one girl, she's a good girl, Irene Violet. She does good work and she's been with us here for 6-7 years, and she does a lot of work. And I have a good staff. I've been very, very fortunate. Good men. But on the other hand, it's...
What is the name of your men's department store?
The Prince of Fashion, which is a new name that we just put in last fall. That was a part of the change, you know. These changes, while you think about it, you say, what are you going to do about it? Or how is it going to work? So you start, like last year again, we repaired the warehouse across the street. We made a new display room, you know. And you have to do those things. You have to keep your volume growing all the time. If you don't, well, there's only one way in and out. And if you keep on going, increasing your business, you may break even with the cost of living and everything. I don't know. So much more that happened in the business. You wonder.
I bet you enjoyed it, but it's the same.
I enjoyed it very much. I think it's part of succeeding in business. If you don't like the work, and if you don't put this little extra effort, you just won't succeed. Because I know with me, like I mentioned a little while ago, I started on a shoestring, and we didn't have anything at all. And the first inventory that we took was really small. And it was really discouraging, but by trying and putting long hours, and the first years I worked at least, Roy and I, at least 14 hours a day.
Did you have any employees in the beginning?
At first, no, just the two of us.
How long did it take you?
And we added on one clerk a year after, and then we added on another clerk. As our volume grew, we added on in 2 years. But by 1945, we were six.
What was the name, the brand of your grocery at the time of when you...
Well, we were, at first, we were more a contract store. You know, we tried to get with IGA, but IGA, we don't get their franchise too easily. They protect their dealers, and it's a good way of doing it. And at the time, they had the McClure's company, which were IGA. So there was no chance of us getting IGA next to them, because we were so close to them. So we had more or less the same line, but under different brand names. And we were called more a contract store from the Milton Tomlinson company, which owns, operates the IGA store. And It's only after the grocery store left or closed their line of groceries that the IGA franchise.
Do you remember the company you were buying your product from?
The first order of groceries that I bought was T.R. Savage Company. And this firm was located in Caribou, Maine. They have been there for a long, long time. And the salesman and manager, more or less, of the wholesale was Roy Ewer. And Roy Ewer was quite a nice man.
How did you spell his last name?
E-W-E-R, I think. I'm not sure, but I think that's the way he spelled his name. That's way back in 1941. And that's the first order of groceries that we bought. And I knew him very well because I had the assistant manager at Uncle Vita, and I knew Roy very, very well. And the training that we had at Vita to really help us to get started, you know.
What kind of store did Vita have?
Uncle Vita had a grocery store and a feed store. He was selling poultry feed. And the meat market. His line was really meats. He specialized more in meat than anything else. So Roy Ewer gave us a good help, and all these companies, like Wilson and Company then, was in Caribou Tree. You know, they had a wholesale place in Caribou. Armors was in Caribou Tree. They were all located in Caribou because of freight, and that's about the first orders that were placed was with these companies, and the stock wasn't very, very big.
Who were the other companies that you went up?
We also bought from Rooster Wholesale at the time. Was in Caribou, Rooster Wholesale. A number of other companies. Just trying to think.
You handle with Pleasing?
Yeah, Pleasing was the line of Rooster Wholesale, which we bought. But most of our stuff was through T.R. Savage. T.R. Savage tried to go into competition more with IGA, and they opened a line. Like they used to call them the Pine Tree Store, which didn't work too well. They worked at it for a while, and then they sold, or they merged with Annaford Brothers in Portland. And when they closed up in Caribou, they moved to Bangor, or they were already in Bangor. They also had a big wholesale house in Bangor. And when they started with this Pine Tree Store, they really built a modern warehouse right in Industrial Park in Bangor. I think they were the first one to build on Hammond Street at the other end of Hammond Street. And they built a big warehouse, and after a while they merged with Annaford Brothers, at which today runs and operates the Shop and Save, and operates the Red and White, and operates a lot of these stores. And Mr. Savage, Mr. Savage, Hotel Savage, died just 2 or 3 years ago, and he was the vice president of the company. Very nice man.
Was the store located close to either the International Mill Company or Paper Company or the Brown?
Well, the store right on the corner of Peter Street and Champlain Street is was closed to those mills at that time, but when we opened up there was no mill there. They were all demolished and gone. There was a mill right down below here, right at the end of Beer Street. The Ammon Lumber Company had a big mill here way back in 19, in the 20s. And the pulp mill was operated too in that time, in the 1918 to 1925 or 6 when they closed it up. And the Brown, which was in Keegan, which is about 2 miles from here, or a mile and a half, you know, was bought by the LaFroy. And they operated the mill for until they closed up. Of course, Irving bought it, and he's the one that demolished the mill.
But did those mills create a residential area, or did it cause a building in the air which you later serviced? Thinking of Morse or
Yes, oh yes, no doubt that's how the population came in this section. The old Alan Ammon is really responsible for all of the people in Champlain, Portland, and this part here of Van Buren, which they used to call Allendale, the old man Alan Ammon. All these little buildings there that the one that I bought, the last one that was up, which I bought from Ralph Sear, there was a street there, and there was 3 of those houses where they're going to the track. And that was built by Alan Ammon. And you could tell Alan Ammon's building, they were all shingled and red shingled. They painted them bright red, you know. And wherever you saw a shingle house outside and red, painted red, it was Alan Ammon's building. And there was a lot of all Champlain Street, with all his buildings, which were built probably in 1910, 1918, 1918, somewhere.
Did you ever work at any of these mills?
Yes. I worked, not for the Ammon, but I worked for the LaFroy. My father was a foreman, and for the chip mill here, I used to work there in the summer, you know, around cleaning, and George Terrio, I guess at the time, was the boss of the mill. Small shipment that they had there, and I used to clean under. Then after a few years, I did that a couple of years in the summer, and then they gave me a job of timekeeper, and I kept time and scaled the cars of lumber that they shipped. They were, for a while, they were making chips, and those chips were all shipped bulk to the Great Northern Paper Company. But after a while, they couldn't sell the chips. They were just shipping their pulpwood. And for 2 years, I was timekeeper and scaler for the floor here, as they used to call it Chapel Eddy Siding.
What?
Chapel Eddy.
Why?
Well, there was probably a chapel here years and years ago. And I don't know how come, but this siding today is still in the books. And you look with the Van Gordon's Roosevelt Railroad, and you're going to see the siding that goes through this mill. It's called the Chapel Eddy Siding.
Did they know the reason why it was?
Well, they probably could give you the reason. I'm not too sure. Why?
And we could write to them and it would know. Because they're pretty good about it.
Yeah, and maybe Ronald Rosier probably could, I don't know, Ronald hasn't been here that long.
But he writes them to him, because I've asked him for information, he's very good.
Yeah, because that was the name, and nobody knows the name of that siding, but the name of the siding is Chapel Eddy Siding. We used to, how I learned about it, more or less, I thought it was the mill or the chipmill side, but when we started in business, we were also selling grain. So we handled the Worthmore feeds for a long, long time, and we supplied most of the poultry and dairy that we had at that time, from 1950 to until they went out of the poultry and dairy business. And the first car of grain that we ordered, we asked them to set it here at a siding because it was close to our business. And that's where I learned it was Chapel 80 siding.
You also ran a gas line for one?
Well, we were distributor for Dead River Oil Company from gas. Yeah.
When you first started?
No, right after the war, 1945, probably. 1945, at that time. But we sold our gas business back to Dead River after a while. We thought it was too much for us. We were not doing any heating business, and we were not interested in it. So we felt it was better for us too. This is a part of a warehouse in back of the store.
Known before?
I'm the one that built that. It looks like a box, but this goes right through in back of the building. And this part of the building is still there, if you go outside and you look at it. But what we did when we enlarged the building, like I mentioned a while ago, this building was 1 feet wide. Today it's 50 feet, so we took this part right here and we extended it here. So we came pretty close to that building. Of course, this is a part of it, the main. And this is a... But of course, we changed the size, we changed the structure, and it doesn't look like that.
And why was the mill abolished or banished or whatever?
Well, depression has a lot to do with it. And a lot of business went out at the time, and I think there were probably, it was more or less the reason that they went out. No demand for lumber. They had an excess stock in the yard, which they kept there, and it was pretty...
Did they, all the mills go up at about the same time?
Oh, no. The first one to go out was Allen Hammond, I think. He had started early and he made very, very well. But depression, I guess the depression really, but even before depression was hurt. He sold his mill, box mill was sold to a man by the name of Foss. I don't remember his first name, but a Mr. Foss from down Boston, I guess, came and bought the box mill. And he kept on operating the box mill. But if you remember, you may not remember that, but years ago, wooden boxes were used for everything. Even crackers in the store. You'd buy your crackers bulk, you would have a 1 pound box. They came in 30 pound box, and it was a wooden box. So your crackers were packed in that with a good paper around it. And there was a demand for boxes, wooden boxes. So we needed wooden boxes until they came to cardboard boxes. So, and the same thing with the lats. You know, we used to make lats. And lats were used for building homes and plaster. We put lats and put plaster over it. There was a big demand for that. When sheetrock came on, or silicates or some other stuff, that you put the plaster over it. That went out of it. There was no more demand for that stuff. It was too costly. And just imagine today making a box, a wooden box, to fit crackers in. And
when going back to the store, right now you have a self-service situation in the grocery. Was it always that way, or when you started?
Oh no. When we started, it was the old type of store. You waited on people, and we were behind a counter, and they came in and say, what can I do for you? And whenever the lady came in and she'd say, I want two can of tomatoes, and we'd go and get two can of tomatoes, put that on the counter, and then they say, what else? And so they said, two can of milk. We'd go to the same spot and get two cans of milk and put it on the counter. And say, what else? So you keep on going like that, you know, and it was a big job because you were waiting on people. And the first, at first, when they first started about self-service stores, nobody believed in it. I know I was working with Uncle Rita then, and Uncle Rita said, it just can't work. It just won't work because people, you know, they can't have cars and go around. But of course, they were all small stores. You need big stores. That's why the chain stores came in. But that reminds me of a story, and which goes to show that the self-service store is good, because Mrs. Upshin Jumet, if you remember Mrs. Upshin Jumet, is Percy Jumet's mother, and they had the tannery here, and they lived right on Main Street, close to Paul Jumeau and that section. She used to come to the store, you know, and I remember